The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Despite not meeting value for money benchmarks, the government is moving forward with awarding a significant construction contract to Invesis, a BAM-controlled subsidiary. BAM, just to remind you, is the main contractor of the National Children's Hospital. So will the gamble pay off for the government, or will it be another case of deja vu disaster? Joining me now, Jack Horgan-Jones, political correspondent of the Irish Times. Jack, good morning.
Good morning, Pat. How are you?
I'm a bit scratchy, the voice, as you can probably hear, but we'll soldier on. Talk to me about the job in hand. What exactly does the contract entail?
It's pretty substantial, Pat. It's a public-private partnership, which is something that I would imagine the majority of Irish people would be familiar with. You'd see signs up on many of the major roads linking our cities saying this was constructed under a public-private mm-hmm. partnership model. They're fairly commonplace, perhaps not quite so commonplace as they used to be, but effectively it involves a private company funding the construction of a piece of infrastructure. Again, the most obvious and typical example would be a road, so the state doesn't have to, and the private company basically sits on top of the asset and takes a chunk of the revenue that it generates over a period of time until it's paid back with a premium on top of its original investment.
Okay. You so can understand how the tolls would produce a revenue. What are these assets that will produce a revenue?
So it's a bunch. It's basically a bunch of university buildings. It's across a whole different range of campuses. You'll remember that the Institutes of Technology were rebranded in the not too distant past into a whole kind of new set of technological universities. So they're for new buildings at the Atlantic Technological University campuses in Galway and Letterkenny, Southeast Technological University in Carlow and Waterford, and the Technological University of the Shannon in Limerick. And there's a whole bunch of stuff covered off there, but it's a big, very big building contract. We're not sure exactly how much it's worth, but one would imagine, given the scale and the scope involved and the multiple locations and the high degree of technical specificity involved in building out the STEM buildings and so on, that it would be worth quite a lot of money indeed.
So this is not simply student accommodation where effectively the students would be paying rent and that's how they get their money. This would involve building buildings that the universities will use and pay a rent to BAM for X years before the whole thing runs out.
Seems to be the case, yeah. That's what logic would suggest. Now, the briefings that I've gotten don't exactly describe what the revenue streams are, but yeah, it's quite technical buildings. It's, as I say, a STEM building, a science and health building, new architecture and engineering building, computing and humanities, applied sciences and IT. So yeah, it's the heavy lifting of kind of university type building projects.
Yeah, so it's kind of doing it on the never-never, that instead of paying upfront for such buildings by the colleges or effectively by the minister, that this private company does it and extracts a rent for so many years until that contract, maybe 30 years or whatever, runs out. That's the way they do it. You wonder why, when we're allegedly awash with cash, why they wouldn't just simply build it and pay for it immediately out of the stash they have.
Exactly. And this kind of gets to the core of the story that we have on the front page of the Irish Times today. When you embark on a PPP, a public-private partnership, there's a whole set of internal kind of guardrails that the state has set down to kind of try and ensure that it gets value for money. Mm-hmm. One of which is called the public sector benchmark. Now, there's a bit of jargon here, so bear with me. But basically what the public sector benchmark does is it does a kind of a comparison exercise with a notional exchequer funded similar type project and says, okay, well, does this PPP, does the public-private partnership come out better or worse than if the state was just to kind of traditionally go down the normal route and build it itself? And what we've established is that value for money comparison, in that value for money comparison, the tender that was submitted by this BAM-linked company exceeded the upper end of the public sector benchmark. So basically they did this test, they ran the value for money test, and in effect this project failed. But nonetheless, notwithstanding the results, the government is deciding to plow ahead on the basis that if they were to stop, re-tender, go back to the drawing board, it could delay the thing even further.
Yeah. Now, the question is, how did this company, a subsidiary of BAM, win the contract? I mean, how many other competitors were there for this job, or were they the only one?
So my understanding is that at this stage, they're the only remaining tenderer. Now, what I can't speak to is whether that was always the case. And I suspect that, you know, the rules of public procurement would certainly suggest that there has to be competitive tension within a process. But certainly at this stage, they're the last man standing. This has actually already gone through cabinet, although we weren't told about it back in July. It's now going back to cabinet today for a final decision to press on after they did an additional cost-benefit analysis on it.
Now, the question of learnings, that horrible word they're always trotting out these days, learnings from the debacle that is the National Children's Hospital construction project, any sign of those learnings in this whole process then?
Well, I think that's the obvious question that's going to be asked, because not only do we all know the storied history of the National Children's Hospital and the cost and time overruns there, but that has been overlaid with a bitter row and dispute, which has rung through the years between the state, the National Paediatric Hospital Development Board, and BAM, the main contractor on the National Children's Hospital site, which has really gotten worse, if anything, in recent years.
And it still has to be fought out, possibly in the courts, before the final bills are settled.
They're rarely out of the High Court, really. If you look at it, they're always rowing over millions in fees, adjudications that go one way or the other. You know, the most recent example is one party taking the other party to court over unpaid settlement of millions of euros that the adjudicator found was due to the contractor. So they're always at each other's throats, and it's a political row as well. Interestingly, Stephen Donnelly, the outgoing Minister for Health, he wrote to Simon Harris, the Taoiseach, about the Children's Hospital within the last few months, raising various kind of concerns about how the process has shook out. And he asked him to raise a particular issue around EU procurement law going forward. Basically, EU procurement law means that, I'm told that it means that you can't take past performance into account when you're assessing, you know, tenders for contracts. So the state can't assess how the National Children's Hospital or any other big building project has gone when it's assessing a bid from BAM or anyone else. And he's asking, can we revisit that? Can we have another look at that? Because they want to be able to take in the wider hinterland of bidders and their history with the state when they're assessing whether to go with someone going forward. Now, whether that's likely to be successful or not, I suspect not. As we all know, EU law takes primacy, and asking the EU to revisit its procurement and competition law off the basis of one project that lost the run of itself in Ireland is unlikely. But yeah, it's a germane fact to this when we see, you know, contracts of this magnitude being handed out again.
There is a little bit of wriggle room in those contracts, because they don't necessarily have to give it to the lowest tender, because we know what contractors will do. They put in a low tender and then they decide they'll make all their money on the extras. That's what happens. You know, you want to move a big thing like an operating theatre from A to B, or you want to move a switch 1 metre lower or higher. It all is down as an extra, and that's how you make your profit.
So, exactly, yeah.
You know, the beauty competition gives, I think there's an element of a judgment at the end of the day, not just the cheapest will win.
Yes, exactly. And without referencing any specific contract or project, you know, this is something that people are aware of, and this is something that does happen. You know, it's effectively the practice of lowballing. I mean, what's interesting within this whole public-private partnership space is that once the value for money test that we were talking about, once that's not met, it's no longer within the gift of the state agency to move forward with the contract. They effectively kick it upstairs, which is why government is considering it today. And it becomes a political decision. It's a cabinet level decision on the recommendation of the minister to move ahead with the project or not. And of course, they may say, and I'm sure they believe, that, you know, this is a key enabler of economic growth and all these kind of things, and basically worth it, and you know, they're happy to go ahead. But the fact that it is kicked up the chain, that it ultimately becomes a political decision, not something they could blame on their underlings if it all goes wrong down the line, that does very much situate ownership.
Now, do we know anything about the detail of this contract? I mean, is it a fixed price contract? Because when you've got a public-private partnership and the ability, you know, through the tolls and so on the toll roads, to jack up the tolls if you want to extract more, or we know the government, for example, compensated the toll road public-private owners when the volumes of traffic were not as predicted during COVID. I presume there's some sort of way they can adjust the revenue, but have they got a fixed price on the whole project to begin with? That would be key. That would be something they should have learned from the Children's Hospital.
Yeah, so you're right. So, I mean, like often within these contracts, you do have kind of fail safes and protection mechanisms to ensure that it proceeds from a financial point of view as intended or as expected, even if unexpected events happen like COVID. As the extent to which that applies to this particular contract, unfortunately, I'm not able to illuminate because I haven't seen the contract itself. I've only been briefed on the kind of political decision-making end of it. But, and you know, as I said, we don't even know exactly how much this is worth. So, despite my best efforts last night, I couldn't establish that, but certainly one to dig into in the days and weeks ahead.
By the way, just back to the Children's Hospital, because whatever people feel about these mystery buildings that will spring up in these various campuses, and we don't know the detail of those yet, in terms of the Children's Hospital, you know, there doesn't seem to be any great appetite for a political inquiry into why the politicians got it wrong. They accused BAM of getting everything wrong, but why the politicians got it wrong. We were supposed to have, at this point, a tri-located children's hospital with maternity and an adult hospital side by side, which we don't have. We have St. James Hospital. We have the massive bump that is the children's hospital. No sign of maternity and no opportunity, I believe, to build it there. So those kind of mistakes were made by the political class, not by the constructor. They were handed the pig and the poke and had to try and build.
Yeah, and as is so often the case with these controversies, it is the political system which is charged with investigating the political system, and that can be a somewhat underwhelming process. Now, in fairness, we have seen various Oireachtas committees look into this, and they've not been behind the door about pulling in senior officials and indeed ministers to answer questions about it. But you're right; like a lot of the finger of blame has been pointed from the state side against the contractor, who has been also pointing that finger of blame back at the government. I think the issue for the government is that, you know, the Children's Hospital debacle is so long-standing and at such a high cost at this stage. It's a sunken political cost. You know, it was one of the defining issues of the 2020 general election, and I don't think anyone would have predicted at that stage that it would also be one of the main issues when it came to the issue of, you know, whether the state is able to adequately discharge its responsibility when it comes to public spending. 4 years later, 4.5 years later, in the next general election, but it was very much to the fore of this as well. So this is a political cost that has accrued to multiple ministers for health now and to successive governments. And we're standing here without a hospital open. And indeed, if my recollection is correct, we're not expecting any patients to be actually serviced in the main campus of the hospital until well into next year, if not the year beyond.
The year after. And the question of access and parking and all of that never really resolved. We're going to be busing the staff who won't be able to get accommodation locally, bussing them in from God knows where to staff that hospital, and whether or not we can actually find the staff to do it properly in the next 18 months, I suppose, is a very open question. Anyway, Jack, thank you. That's for another day. Jack Horgan-Jones, political correspondent with the Irish Times.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.